Disney posters. Although I'm sure posters are too low class for this place. Just like my backpack sitting on the floor near the door is. Yesterday's events flick through my mind, halting at the stack of $100 bills. I leap out of bed and grab the backpack. Ripping it open, I sigh with relief when I see the stack of Benjamins on the top. I thumb the bills and listen to the sweet sound of the paper shuffling, replacing the silence of the room. I could take this right now and leave. 10 grand would keep me afloat for a long time. But if I stay, Callum Royal has promised me so much more. The bed, the room, 10 grand each month until I graduate. Just for going to school? For living in this mansion? For driving my own car? I tuck the money into the secret pocket at the bottom of the bag. I'll give it a day. There's nothing stopping me from leaving tomorrow, or next month, or the month after. The minute things go bad, I can jet. With my money secured, I dump the rest of the bag's contents out on the bed and take stock. For clothes, there are 2 pairs of skinny jeans, the baggy pair I wore home from the strip joint to avoid attention, 5 t-shirts, 5 pairs of undies, 1 bra, the corset I danced in last night, a g-string, a pair of stripper heels, and 1 nice dress that was my mother's back in the day. It's black, short, and makes me look like I have more upstairs than what God gave me. There's a makeup case. Again, mostly things my mom used, but also castaways from various strippers we met along the way. The kit is probably worth at least a grand. I've also got my book of Auden poetry, which, I guess, is the most romantic and unnecessary part of my belongings. But I found it lying on a coffee shop table, and the inscription matched the one on my watch. I couldn't leave it there. It was kismet, even though I generally don't believe in that stuff. Fate is for the weak. Those people who don't have enough power or will to shape life into what they need it to be. I'm not there yet. I don't have enough power, but I will someday. I rub my hand over the cover of the book. Maybe I can get a part-time job somewhere waiting tables. A steakhouse would be good. That'd give me some spending money, so I wouldn't have to dip into the 10 grand, which I've now deemed untouchable. A knock at the door startles me. Callum? I call.
No, it's Reed. Open up.
I glance down at my oversized t-shirt. It belongs to one of my mom's old boyfriends and mostly covers me. But I'm not facing the accusing and angry glare of one of the royal boys unless I'm fully armed, which means dressed up and with a complete layer of bad girl makeup on. I'm not decent.
Like I give a shit. You've got 5 seconds and then I'm coming in.
The words are flat and forceful. Jerk. With the guns on that guy, I have no doubt he could break down the door if he wanted to. I stomp over and fling it open. What do you want? He gives me a rude once-over, and even though my shirt hangs down far enough to cover anything racy, he makes me feel like I'm completely naked. I hate that. And the distrust that planted itself last night grows into genuine dislike.
I want to know what your game is.
He steps forward, and I know it's meant to intimidate me. This is a guy who uses his physicality as both a weapon and a lure. I think you should be talking to your father. He's the one who kidnapped me and brought me here. Reed takes another step. Until we're so close, each breath we take makes our bodies rub against each other. He's hot enough that my mouth dries up. And tingles start dancing places I'd like to think an asshole like him would never awaken. But another lesson I learned from my mom is that your body can like things that your head hates. Your head just has to be the one in charge. That was one of her do-as-I-say-not-as-I-do admonishments. He's a jerk and he wants to hurt you. I scream at my body. My nipples pucker despite my warning.
And you fought real hard, didn't you?
He looks down with disdain at the peaks that have formed under my thin shirt. There's nothing for me to do but pretend my nips are always at attention. Again, you should be talking to your father. I turn away and pretend Reed Royal isn't firing every nerve ending in my body. I stroll to the bed and pick up a pair of plain bikini panties, as if I don't have a care in the world. I step out of my old ones and leave them lying on the cream-colored carpet. Behind me, I hear a swift intake of breath. Score one for the away team. As nonchalantly as possible, I pull on the new pair, carefully working them up my legs and under the long hem of my nightshirt. I can feel his eyes run over my body like it's a physical touch.
You should know, whatever game you're playing, you can't win. Not against all of us.
His voice has deepened and roughened. My show is affecting him. Score two. I'm so glad my back is to him, so he can't see that I'm affected too, by just his voice and his gaze.
If you leave now, you won't be hurt. We'll let you keep whatever Dad's given you, and none of us will bother you. If you stay, we'll break you so bad that you'll be crawling away.
I tug my jeans on, and then, with my back still turned, start to whip off my shirt. A harsh chuckle follows, and I hear swift footsteps. His hand clamps on my shoulder, keeping my shirt intact. He twists me to face him. Then, he leans in close, his lips inches from my ear.
Newsflash, baby. You can do a striptease in front of me every day, and I still wouldn't do you. Got that? You may have my dad wrapped around your underage ass, but the rest of us have your number.
Reed's hot breath skates down my neck, and it takes every ounce of willpower not to shiver. Am I scared? Turned on? Who the hell knows? My body is so confused right now. Crap, am I ever my mother's daughter or what? Because liking men who treat you badly is... was, damn it. Maggie Harper's calling card. Let me go, I say coldly. His fingers tighten on my shoulder a moment before he pushes back from me. I stumble forward, catching myself on the edge of the bed.
We're all watching you, he says ominously, and then stomps out.
My hands shake as I hurriedly finish dressing. Starting now, I'm always going to have clothes on in this house, even in the privacy of my bedroom. There's no way I'm letting that jerk Reed catch me off guard ever again.
Ella?
I jump in surprise and whirl around to see Callum standing at my open door. Callum, you scared me, I squeak, slapping my hand across my thundering heart.
Sorry.
He walks in holding a worn piece of notebook paper.
Your letter.
My surprised gaze flies up to his. Thanks.
Didn't think I'd give it to you, did you?
I make a face. Truthfully? I wasn't sure it existed.
I won't lie to you, Ella. I've got a lot of flaws.
My son's antics could probably fill a book longer than War and Peace with all of them, but I won't lie.
And I'm not going to ask you for anything more than a chance.
He presses the paper into my hand.
When you're done, come down and have breakfast. There's a back staircase at the end of the hall, and it leads to the kitchen, whenever you're ready.
Thanks, I will. He smiles warmly at me.
I'm so glad you're here. For a while there, I thought I'd never find you.
I don't know what to say. If it was just Callum and me, I think I would be relieved to be here, maybe even grateful. But after the encounter with Reed, I'm halfway between afraid and terrified.
That's okay. You'll get used to all of this, I promise.
He gives me what is supposed to be a reassuring wink and disappears. I sink onto the bed and unfold the letter with trembling fingers. Dear Steve, I don't know if you'll ever get this letter, or if you'll even believe it when you read it. I'm sending it to the Little Creek Naval Base with your ID number. You dropped a piece of paper here with it, along with your watch. I kept the watch, somehow remembered that damned number. Anyway, straight to the point. You knocked me up in that frenzy we had the month before you shipped out to God knows where. By the time I figured out I was Prego, you were long gone. The guys at the base weren't interested in hearing my story. I suspect you aren't interested in it now. But if you are, you should come. I'm sick with cancer. It's eating up my colon. I swear I can feel it inside me like some parasite. My baby girl's gonna be alone. She's resilient. Tough. Tougher than me. I love her. And while I don't fear death, I dread that she's gonna be alone. I know we weren't more than two warm bodies knocking uglies, but I swear to you, we created the best damn thing in the world. You'll hate yourself if you don't at least meet her. Ella Harper. I named her after that corny music box you won for me in Atlantic City. Thought you might appreciate that. Anyway, hope you get this in time. She doesn't know you exist, but she has your watch and your eyes. You'll know it the first time you lay eyes on her. Sincerely, Maggie Harper. I duck into my private bathroom, also bubblegum pink, to press a washcloth against my face. Don't cry, Ella. There's no point in crying. I lean over the sink and splash my face, pretending that all the water dripping into the porcelain bowl is from the faucet, and not my eyes. Once I have myself under control, I yank a brush through my hair and sweep it up into a high ponytail. I slather on some BB cream to cover up my red eyes and call it a day. Before I leave, I stuff everything into the backpack, and then swing it over my shoulder. This is going with me everywhere, until I find a place to hide it. I pass four doors before I find the back staircase. The hallway outside my room is so wide I could drive one of Callum's cars down it. Okay, this place must have been a hotel at one time, because it just seems ridiculous that a house for one family is this big. The kitchen at the bottom of the stairs is ginormous. There are two stoves, an island with a marble countertop, and a huge bank of white cabinets. I spot a sink, but no refrigerator or dishwasher. Maybe there's another working kitchen in the bowels of the house and I'll be sent there to scrub floors, despite what Callum said earlier. Which would actually be okay. I'd be more comfortable doing real work for the money than just going to school and being a normal kid, because who gets paid for being normal? No one. At the far end of the kitchen, an enormous table overlooks the ocean through floor-to-ceiling windows. The royal brothers sit at four of the 16 seats. They're all wearing uniforms, white dress shirts with the untucked tails resting over flat-front khakis. Blue blazers hang over the backs of a few chairs. And somehow each boy manages to pull off looking gorgeous, with a side of brutishness. This place is like the Garden of Eden. Beautiful, but full of danger.
How do you like your eggs?
Callum asks. He stands at the stove with a spatula in one hand and two eggs in the other. It doesn't look like a comfortable pose for him. A quick glance at the boys confirms my suspicions. Callum rarely cooks. Scrambled is good for me. No one can screw that up. He nods and then points the spatula at a large cabinet door close to him.
There's fruit and yogurt in the fridge and bagels behind me.
I walk over to the cabinet and pull it open, as four sets of sullen, angry eyes track me. It's like the first day at a new school, and everyone has decided they hate the new girl, just for the hell of it. A light turns on, and cold air hits my face. Hidden refrigerators. Because why would you want anyone to see that you own a refrigerator? Weird. I pull out a container of strawberries and set it on the counter. Reed throws down his napkin.
I'm done. Who wants a ride?
The twins scrape back their chairs, but the other one, Easton, I think, shakes his head.
I'm picking up Claire this morning.
Boys,
their father says warningly. It's fine. I don't want to start a fight or be the source of tension between Callum and his sons.
It's fine, Dad,
Reed mocks. He turns to his brothers.
10 minutes and we leave.
They all follow like baby ducks. Or, maybe the better analogy is soldiers.
I'm sorry.
Callum heaves a sigh.
I don't know why they're so upset. I planned on driving you to school regardless. I just hoped they'd be more welcoming.
The smell of burning eggs has us both turning toward the stove.
Shit!
He curses. I move next to him and see a dark, congealing mess. He smiles ruefully.
I never cook, but I figured I couldn't screw eggs up. Guess I was wrong.
So he never cooks, but he does for some strange girl he brought home? Not hard to see the source of resentment. Are you hungry? Because I'm okay with fruit and yogurt. Fresh fruit is something I haven't had the privilege of eating often. Fresh anything is a sign of privilege.
Starving, actually.
He gives me a pitiful look. I can cook some eggs. Before I even finish, he pulls out a package of bacon. And bacon, if you have it.
As I cook, Callum leans against the counter.
So 5 boys, huh? That's a handful.
Their mother died 2 years ago. They've never really recovered. None of us have. Maria was the glue that held us together.
He shoves a hand through his hair.
I wasn't around much before she died. Atlantic Aviation was going through a rough time, and I was chasing deals around the globe.
He lets out a gusty sigh. The business I've managed to turn around. The family is still a work in progress. Based on what I saw of his sons, I don't think they're even close to the bend in the road. But Callum's parenting skills aren't any of my business. I make a noncommittal noise at the back of my throat that Callum takes as encouragement to continue.
Gideon's the oldest. He's away at college but comes home on the weekends. I think he must be seeing someone around town, but I don't know who. You should meet him tonight.
Goody, not. That'd be nice, in the way an enema is nice.
I'd like to take you over to the school, get you enrolled. After we get you squared away, Brooke, that's my girlfriend, has offered to take you shopping. I figure you can start school on Monday.
How far behind am I?
Classes started 2 weeks ago. I've seen your grades, so I think you'll be fine.
He reassures me.
Your PIs must be pretty good if you have my school records.
I frown into the eggs.
You've moved around a lot, but yes, eventually, when I found out your mother's full name, it wasn't too hard to backtrack and obtain everything I needed.
Mom did the best she could with me.
I jut out my chin.
She stripped. Did she force you to do that too?
Callum reacts angrily.
No, I did that all on my own.
I slap his eggs onto a plate. He can cook his own stupid bacon. No one gets to run down my mom in front of me.
Callum grabs my arm.
Look, I... Am I interrupting something?
A cold voice sounds from the doorway. I whip around and see Reed. His voice is icy, but his eyes are full of fire. He doesn't like me standing close to his dad. I know it's a total dick move, but something drives me to step even closer to Callum, almost under his arm.
Callum's paying attention to his son, so he doesn't realize the reason for my sudden closeness.
But Reed's narrowed eyes tell me he gets the message. I raise my hand and place it on Callum's shoulder.
No, I was just making your dad some breakfast. I smile sweetly.
If possible, Reed's expression gets even stormier.
I forgot my jacket.
He stalks over to the table and pulls it off the chair. See you at school, Reed. I taunt. He spears me with another glare. Before turning and leaving, my hand falls away. Callum looks down at me, bemused.
You're poking a tiger.
I shrug. He poked me first. Callum shakes his head.
And I thought raising 5 boys was an adventure. I haven't seen anything yet, have I?
Chapter 6. Callum drives me to the school I'll be attending for the next 2 years. Well, Durand drives. Callum and I sit in the back seat, and he's shuffling through a stack of what looks like blueprints, while I stare out the window, trying not to think about what went down in my bedroom earlier with Reed. 10 minutes pass before Callum finally looks up from his work.
I'm sorry, I'm playing catch-up. I took some time off after Steve's death, and the board is on my ass to get on top of things.
I'm tempted to ask him what Steve was like, if he was nice, what he did for fun, why he screwed my mom and never looked back. I keep my mouth shut instead. A part of me doesn't want to know about my father, because if I know about him, he becomes real. He might even become good. It's easier to think of him as the jerk who abandoned my mom. I gesture to the papers. Are those plans for your airplanes? He nods.
We're designing a new fighter jet. Army commissioned it.
Jesus, he doesn't just build planes. He builds military-grade planes. That's big money. Then again, considering their house, I shouldn't be surprised.
And my father, Steve, he designed planes too?
He was more involved in the testing sector.
I am too, to some extent, but your father had a real passion for flying.
My dad liked to fly planes. I file away that information. As I fall silent, Callum's voice softens.
You can ask me whatever you want about him, Ella. I knew Steve better than anyone.
I'm not sure I'm ready to know about him yet, I answer vaguely.
Understood. But whenever you are ready, I'm happy to tell you about him. He was a great man.
I bite back the retort that he couldn't have been that great if he abandoned me, but I don't want to get into it with Callum. All thoughts of Steve disappear when the car reaches a set of gates that must be 20 feet high, at least. Is this how the royals live, driving from one gate to another? We pass through them and follow a paved road that ends in front of a massive, gothic-looking building, covered in ivy. I look around when we step out of the car, and note similar buildings dotting the pristine campus of Astor Park Prep Academy, along with acres of grass. I guess that's why Park is in the name of the school.
Stick around, Callum tells Durand through the open driver's window. I'll ring you when we're ready to leave.
The black car disappears toward a parking gate at the far end of the drive. Callum turns to me and says,
Headmaster Berenger is expecting us.
It's hard to keep my jaw off the ground as I follow him up the wide set of steps toward the front doors. This school is bonkers. It oozes money and privilege. The manicured lawn and massive courtyard are deserted. I guess everyone is already in class. In one of the far fields, I see a blur of uniform-clad boys playing soccer. Callum follows my gaze.
Do you play any sports?
No. I mean, I'm athletic, kind of. Dance, gymnastics, that stuff, but I'm not very good at sports. He purses his lips.
That's too bad. If you join a team or squad, you're exempt from taking the phys ed class. I'll ask if there's an opening on one of the cheerleading squads. You might be a good fit there.
A cheerleader? Yeah, right. You need pep for that. And I'm the least peppy person you'll ever meet. We step into a lobby that belongs in a college movie. Large portraits of alumni hang on the oak-paneled walls, and the hardwood floor beneath our feet is polished. A few guys in blue blazers saunter by, their curious gazes landing on me briefly before they continue on.
Reed and Easton play football. Our team is number one in the state. And the twins play lacrosse, Callum tells me. If you earn a spot on a pep squad, you might end up cheering for one of their teams.
I wonder if he realizes he's just building an even bigger case for me not becoming a cheerleader. No way am I bouncing around and waving my arms in the air for an asshole royal. Maybe, I mutter. I'd rather concentrate on my studies. Callum strides into the waiting room of the headmaster's office, as if he's been there hundreds of times before. He probably has, because the white-haired secretary behind the desk greets him like they're old friends.
Mr. Royal, it's lovely to see you here under positive circumstances for a change.
He offers a crooked grin.
Tell me about it.
Is Francois ready for us?
He is. Go right in.
The meeting with the headmaster goes smoother than I expect. I wonder if Callum threw some money at the guy so he wouldn't ask too many questions about my background. But he must have been told some things, because at the start of the meeting, he asks if I want to be called Ella Harper or O'Halloran.
Harper,
I answer stiffly. I'm not giving up my mother's name. She raised me, not Steve O'Halloran. I'm given my class schedule, which includes a gym class. Against my protests, Callum tells Headmaster Berenger that I'm interested in trying out for a pep squad. Jeez, I have no idea what this man has against P.E. Once we're done, Berenger shakes my hand and tells me that my student guide is waiting in the lobby to take me on a quick tour. I shoot a panicky glance at Callum, but he's oblivious, too busy talking about the ninth green being tricky. Apparently he and Berenger are golf buddies, and he waves me off, telling me Durand will bring the car around in an hour. I bite my lip as I leave the office. I don't know how I feel about this school. Academically, I'm told it's top-notch.
but everything else, the uniforms, the fancy campus, I don't fit in. I already know this, and my thoughts are confirmed the moment I meet my tour guide. She's wearing the navy blue skirt and white dress shirt that make up the school uniform, and everything about her screams money, from her perfectly styled hair to the French tip nails. She introduces herself as Savannah Montgomery.
"Yes, those Montgomerys,"
she says knowingly, as if that's supposed to clue me in. I still have no freaking idea who she is. She's a junior like me, and she spends a good 20 seconds sizing me up. Her nose wrinkles at my tight jeans and tank top, the scuffed combat boots on my feet, my hair, my unmanicured nails, and hastily applied makeup.
"Your uniforms will be shipped to your house this weekend," she informs me. "The skirt's non-negotiable, but there are ways around the hem length."
She winks and smooths out the bottom of her skirt, which barely grazes her lower thighs. The other girls I glimpsed in the hallway had their skirts down to their knees.
"What, blow the teachers get a shorter skirt allowance?" I ask politely.
Her ice-blue eyes widen in alarm. Then she laughs awkwardly.
No. Just slip a hundy to Behringer if one of the teachers complains and he looks the other way.
Must be nice living in a world where you can slip people hundies. I'm a dollar bill kind of girl, because that was the denomination usually tucked into my G-string. I decide not to share that with Savannah.
"Anyway, let me show you around," she says.
But we're barely a minute into the tour before I realize she's not interested in playing tour guide. She wants intel.
"Classroom, classroom, ladies' room."
Her fancy fingernails flick at various doors as we head down the hall.
"So, Callum Royal is your legal guardian?"
"Classroom, classroom, junior faculty lounge. How did that happen?"
I'm stingy with my response.
He knew my father.
"Callum's business partner, right? My parents were at his funeral."
Savannah flips her chestnut brown hair over her shoulder and pushes open a set of doors.
"Freshman classrooms," she says. "You won't be spending much time here. Sophomore classes are in the East Wing."
"So you're living with the Royals, huh?"
"Yes."
I don't elaborate. We whiz past a long row of lockers, which look nothing like the narrow, rusty lockers in the public schools I went to over the years. These are navy blue, and the width of three regular lockers. They gleam in the sunlight streaming in from the wall of windows in the hall. We're outside before I can blink, walking down a cobblestone path lined with gorgeous shade trees on each side. Savannah points to another ivy-colored building.
"That's the junior wing. All your classes will be in there, except P.E. The gym's on the south lawn."
East wing, south lawn. This campus is ridiculous.
"You meet the boys yet?"
She stops in the middle of the path, her shrewd dark eyes fixed on my face. She's sizing me up again. "Yep." I meet her gaze head on.
"Wasn't too impressed."
That gets me a startled laugh.
"You're in the minority, then."
Her face sharpens again. "First thing you need to know about Aster. The Royals run this place, Eleanor." "Ella," I correct. She waves her hand.
"Whatever.
They make the rules. They enforce them. And you all follow them like good little sheep." A slight sneer touches her lips.
"If you don't, then the 4 years you spend here will be miserable."
"Well, I don't give a damn about their rules," I say with a shrug. "I might live in their house, but I don't know them, and I don't want to know them. I'm just here to get my diploma."
"All right. I guess it's time for another lesson about Aster."
She shrugs back. "Only reason I'm being so nice to you right now?"
"Wait, this is her way of being nice?"
"Is because Reed hasn't issued the royal decree yet."
I raise a brow.
"Meaning?"
"Meaning. All it takes is one word from him, and you'll be nothing here. Insignificant. Invisible.
Or worse." Now I laugh. "Is this supposed to scare me?"
"No, it's just the truth.
We've been waiting for you to show up. We were warned, and we've been told to stand down until otherwise ordered." "By who? Reed? The king of Aster Park?" Gee, I'm trembling in my panties.
"They haven't reached a decision about you. They will soon, though. I've known you for 5 minutes, and I can already tell you what their decision will be. She smirks. Women have a sixth sense. It doesn't take us long to know what we're dealing with.
I smirk back. No, it doesn't. The stare-off that follows only lasts a few seconds. Long enough for me to convey with my eyes that I don't give a shit about her, or Reed, or this social hierarchy she clearly abides by. Then, Savannah flips her hair again, and beams at me.
Come on, Eleanor. Let me show you the football stadium. It's state-of-the-art, you know.
Chapter 7 Savannah's tour wraps up after a view of the indoor Olympic-sized swimming pool. If there's one thing she approves of, it's my figure. The barely fed look is popular, she informs me, with a brusqueness I'm beginning to believe is just her personality, and not a reflection of what she thinks of me.
You might think I'm a bitch, but I'm just honest. Astor Park is an entirely different kind of school. I'm assuming you went to public?
She gestures toward my thrift store skinny jeans.
Yeah, but so what? School is school. I get it. There are different cliques. The popular kids, the rich kids.
She flips her hand up to stop me.
No, this isn't like anything you've ever experienced before. The gym we saw earlier? I nod at the question. It was originally supposed to be for the football team, but Jordan Carrington's family threw a fit, and it was redesignated as open access except during specific times. Between 5 and 8 in the morning and 2 and 8 in the afternoon, it's football only. The rest of the time, normals can use it. Nice, hmm?
I'm not sure if she's joking, because the limited access sounds ridiculous. Why did the Carringtons object? I ask curiously.
Astor Park is a prep school with a P. Savannah keeps walking. There's no quit button on her. Every family in the state wants their kids to go here, but it's exclusive. You can't just have money to get in. Everyone that attends, even the scholarship students, are here because they have something special to offer. It might be that they're great on the football field, or can elevate the science team to win national awards, which means national press. In Jordan's case, she's the captain of the dance team, which, in my opinion, is one step up from stripping.
Crap, that better not be why Callum suggested that this morning.
But they win, and Astor Park likes to see its name in the paper next to the W.
Then why am I here? I mutter under my breath. But Savannah has superhero hearing because as she pushes open the front door, she says,
You're a royal of some sort. What kind of royal remains to be seen? This school will eat you up if you're weak, so my suggestion is to take advantage of everything the royal name offers you, even if it means taking it by force.
A car door slams, and a very thin, platinum blonde, in skin-tight jeans and sky-high stilettos, totters toward us.
Hello?
The stranger holds a hand to her forehead, as if she's shading her eyes from the sun, which is completely unnecessary, given that she has enormous sunglasses covering her face. My tour guide mutters softly,
That's Callum Royal's girlfriend. You don't have to be nice to her. She's just an extra.
And with that last bit of sage advice, Savannah disappears, leaving me with this wisp of a woman.
You must be Elaine. I'm Brooke, Callum's friend. I'm here to take you shopping.
She claps her hands together as if this is the most exciting thing ever. Ella, I correct.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm so terrible with names.
She beams at me.
We're going to have so much fun today.
I hesitate. We don't have to go shopping. I'm good just hanging out here at the school until the bus comes.
Oh, dear.
She titters.
There are no buses. Besides, Callum told me to take you shopping, so that's what we're going to do.
She grips my arm with surprising strength and drags me toward the town car. And inside is Durand. I'm beginning to love him. Hey, Durand, I wave, before glancing back at Brooke. How about I sit up front with Durand and let you relax in the back? I offer.
No, I want to get to know you.
She pushes me into the back seat and climbs in beside me.
Tell me everything.
I stifle a sigh, not exactly looking forward to making small talk with Callum's girlfriend. Then I chastise myself for it, because Brooke hasn't done anything but be nice to me. I'm not usually so judgy, and I force myself to lower my guard a little. If anything, it sounds like Brooke is more my type than the Royals. If random classmates of the boys call her an extra. She looks young, though. Really young. As in, Callum could be her father young. There's not much to tell, I reply with a shrug. I'm Ella Harper. Callum says that Steve O'Halloran is my father. Brooke nods. Yes, he told me this morning. Isn't that amazing? He told me how he found you just a few hours away, and he was so upset to discover your mom had passed away. She reaches for my hand, her bright smile dimming at the corners slightly. My mother died when I was 13. A brain aneurysm. I was heartbroken, so I know just how you feel. When she squeezes my hand, I feel a lump develop in my throat. I have to swallow twice before I can answer. I'm sorry for your loss. Her eyelids flutter closed for a moment, as if she's also struggling for control over her emotions.
Well, we're both in a better place now, aren't we? Callum saved me as well, you know.
You were stripping too? I blurt out. Brooke's eyes widen, and a little laugh trips out before she can cover her mouth.
Is that what you were doing?
It wasn't full nudity. I cringe in the face of her giggles, wishing I never brought it up in the first place. She composes herself and reaches out to pat my hand again.
I'm sorry I'm laughing. It's not at you, but at Callum. He was probably mortified. He's trying so hard to be a good father for his boys right now, and I'm sure finding his young charge in a strip club had to be shocking.
Flushed and embarrassed, I look out the window. This day couldn't have gone worse. From the weird feelings Reed's aggressive hate brought out, to the condescending tour guided by Savannah, to my embarrassing confession to Callum's girlfriend, I hate feeling like I don't belong. The first day at a new school, the first ride on a bus, the first... A tap on my forehead interrupts my thoughts. Hey, don't get lost in there, sweetie. I glance over my shoulder at Brooke. I'm not, I tell her.
Bullshit.
She speaks the curse word softly and tenderly. Her hand rises to cup my cheek.
I didn't strip. But that's because I chose to do worse things to get by.
You get no judgment from me. None. The important thing is that you're not there anymore, and you won't ever have to be again. If you play your cards right, you'll be set for life. Then she pulls her hand back and smacks me lightly. Now put on a smile because we're going shopping. Not gonna lie, that sounds good to me.
How much will it cost?
I've been to the mall before. Things can add up fast, even if they're on sale. But if I have a school uniform, then I only need one or two items. Another pair of pants. Maybe a shirt or two. The beach is nearby, so a swimsuit makes sense. I could part with a few $100s.
Brooke's face lights up.
She pulls out a card and waves it in front of my face.
You're asking the wrong question. This is all on Callum, and trust me, no matter what he says about his business being in the toilet a few years ago, that man could buy and sell the entire shopping complex and still have enough left over to make even the most expensive hooker orgasm.
I don't even know how to respond to that. We end up at an outdoor mall that features tiny shops with tiny clothes and enormous price tags. When I can't bring myself to pull the trigger on any purchase, $1,500 for a pair of shoes? Are they made out of actual gold? Brooke takes over and shoves item after item at the sales clerk. There are so many bags and boxes, I'm scared Durand is going to have to trade in the town car for a U-Haul. After the 10th store, I'm exhausted, and from the sigh she heaves out, I'm guessing Brooke isn't far behind.
I'm going to sit here and enjoy some refreshments while you finish up.
She sinks down in a velvet chair and gestures for a salesgirl who comes over immediately.
What can I get for you, Miss Davidson?
A mimosa.
She waves a hand at me, clutching the black credit card she's been using so hard, I'm surprised it hasn't melted between her fingers.
Go forth and buy. Callum will be disappointed if you come home with less than a trunk full of bags.
He specifically told me that you needed everything. But I'm completely out of my element. Drop me in a Walmart, or heck, even a Gap, and I think I could do just fine. But here, none of these clothes look like they should even be worn. But Brooke's done talking to me. She and the sales clerk are having an intense conversation about whether gray flannel or gray tweed is a better fall trend. I reluctantly take the credit card, which is heavier than any card I've ever felt. I wonder if there's another card sandwiched between this one, and that's how Brooke manages to charge half the store and not be turned away. I leave and buy a few more things, trembling at the cost of them, and am frankly relieved when Durand shows up to take us back to the Royal Castle. On the drive home, Brooke chatters my ear off and offers tips about how to pair up some of my purchases to create the perfect designer ensemble. Some of her suggestions make me giggle, and I'm startled to realize I didn't have such a bad time with Brooke today. Her enthusiasm is a bit much, sure, and she's kind of over the top. But maybe I was being unfair when I questioned Callum's taste in women. If anything, Brooke is at least entertaining. "Thanks for the ride, Durand," I say, when we pull up to the front door of the mansion. He stops the car here instead of driving around to the side like he did yesterday, when we arrived from Kirkwood. Durand helps Brooke out of the car and up the stairs. I trail behind like the extra that Savannah referred to Brooke as.
"I'll bring in the bags," he tells me over his shoulder.
All of it makes me feel awkward and useless. I really should get a job. Maybe if I had my own money and some real friends, I could start feeling normal again. When I dreamed of my future, it didn't include limos and mansions and mean girls and designer labels. The pendulum of my life has swung too far in the opposite direction. Callum is waiting in the foyer as Durand carries my bags inside, Brooke and I trailing behind him.
"Thanks for your help,"
Callum tells his driver.
"Darling!"
Brooke comes alive at Callum's voice and throws herself at him.
"We had so much fun!"
Callum nods in approval.
"I'm glad."
He glances my way.
"Gideon is home. I want you to meet him, without other distractions. After that, why don't we grab a late lunch?"
"Gideon?"
Brooke's eyes light up.
"It's been too long since I've seen that darling boy."
She rises on her tiptoes and pecks at Callum's cheek.
"Your lunch plans sound delightful. I can't wait."
The throaty delivery nearly makes me blush. Callum coughs awkwardly.
"Come on, Ella. I want you to meet my oldest."
There's a lot of pride in his voice, and I follow him curiously to the back of the house, where a gorgeous blue and white tiled pool decorates a perfectly manicured lawn. Inside the pool is a human arrow slicing through the water with clean, even strokes. Next to me, Brooke sighs. Or maybe that's a moan. Either sound makes sense, because even in the water, you can appreciate the sculpted muscles of the eldest royal. And if the other royal sons are anything to go by, he's probably not hard to look at out of the water, too. I guess I can see why Brooke was excited to hear his name, but it's a little creepy, given that she's dating his dad. Adults are complicated, I decide. It's not my place to judge their relationship. After two more laps, Gideon stops and hauls himself out of the pool. In his Speedo, it's easy to see there's no shrinkage problem for this guy.
"Dad."
He rubs a towel over his wet face, and then drapes it around his neck. He doesn't seem to notice or care that he's dripping water all over the deck.
"Gideon, this is Ella Harper, Steve's daughter."
His son flicks his eyes over me.
"So you found her?" "I did."
They talk about me like I'm a lost puppy. Callum's hand lands on my shoulder and propels me forward.
"Nice to meet you, Gideon."
I wipe my hand on my jeans and then stick it out.
"Likewise."
He shakes my hand, and despite the coolness in his tone,
I find him to be friendlier than anyone else in this house, other than his father.
I've got some calls to make.
He turns to his dad.
But first I need to shower. I'll see you later.
He brushes by us. As we turn to watch him walk away, I happen to catch a glimpse of Brooke's face, and the hunger there shocks me. Her eyes have that greedy look, the one my mom would wear when she saw something extravagant she wanted, but couldn't have. Callum seems oblivious. He's turned his attention to me, but I can't stop thinking about Brooke's expression. She totally has the hots for Callum's son.
Am I the only one who can see that?
Stop it, Ella. This is none of your business.
How about we get some lunch now?
Callum suggests.
There's a great little cafe, just about 5 minutes from here. Serves amazing farm-to-table stuff.
Very fresh, light.
Sure. I'm ready to escape.
I'll come too,
Brooke says.
Actually, Brooke, if it's all right with you, I want to have Ella to myself for now.
His tone says it doesn't matter if she's okay with the arrangement, because that's how it's going to be.
Chapter 8.
Lunch with Callum is surprisingly pleasant. He tells me more about Steve, even though I didn't ask about him. But he confesses that just being able to talk about Steve is a relief. Callum admits he hasn't always been there for either his sons or his wife. But whenever Steve needed him, he'd drop everything. Apparently that seal bond was unbreakable. He doesn't make fun of me when I ask if that's where they became buds, but he looks like he's fighting a smile, as he explains that buds is a Navy training program. By the time we're done eating, I have a better sense of the senior royal. Devoted, a little single-minded, and not entirely in control of his own life. We stay away from the topic of his sons, but I tense up when the gates swing open.
They'll come around, Callum says encouragingly.
We find the guys huddled in a large room at the end of the right wing of the house. The game room, Callum calls it. Despite the black walls, the place is enormous, so it doesn't look like a cave. The boys meet us with stone-cold silence, and Callum's earlier reassurances suddenly sound unconvincing.
Where are you all going tonight?
Callum asks in a conversational tone. At first, no one says anything. The younger ones all look to Reed, who's leaning against a bar stool, one foot on the floor and one foot braced on the lowest rung of the chair. Gideon stands behind the bar, his hands braced on the top, watching it all.
Gideon,
Callum prompts. His eldest shrugs.
Jordan Carrington's having a party.
Reed swings around and scowls at Gideon as if he's a traitor.
You're taking Ella to the party, their father orders. It will be good for her to get to know her new classmates.
There'll be booze, drugs, and sex,
Reed mocks. You really want her there?
I'd rather just stay in tonight, I volunteer, but no one is listening to me.
Then you five will watch out for her. She's your sister now.
Callum folds his arms over his chest. This is a contest of wills, and he wants to win it. He also seems completely unconcerned about the booze, drugs, and sex part. Awesome. This is really fantastic.
Oh, did you adopt her?
Reed says sarcastically.
Guess we shouldn't be surprised. Doing shit without telling us is your M.O., right, Dad?
I don't want to go to the party, I cut in. I'm tired. I'm happy just to stay at home.
Good idea, Ella.
Callum unfolds his arms and places one around my shoulder.
You and I will watch a movie then.
A muscle ticks in Reed's jaw.
You win. She can come with us. We leave at 8.
Callum drops his arm. He isn't as clueless as I thought. The boys don't want me alone with him, and Callum knows it. Reed's steely blue eyes shift to me.
Better go upstairs and make yourself presentable, sis. Can't ruin your big debut by showing up looking like that.
Reed,
Callum warns. His son's expression is the epitome of innocence.
Just trying to be helpful.
From his perch near the pool table, Easton looks like he's fighting a grin. Gideon is resigned, and the twins are studiously ignoring us all. A tremor of panic ripples through me. The high school parties I'd gone to in the past, all one of them, had been a jeans and t-shirt affair. The girls slutted it up, sure, but in a casual smut kind of way. I want to ask how fancy this party will be, but I don't want to give the royal brothers the satisfaction of knowing just how out of my element I feel. Since 8 o'clock is 15 minutes from now, I book it upstairs, where I find all my shopping bags placed in a neat row at the end of the bed. Savannah's warnings hang in the back of my mind. If I'm going to be here for 2 years, then I need to make a good impression. And now at the forefront of my mind is another thought. Why the hell do I care? I don't need these people to like me. I just need to graduate from high school. But I do care. I hate myself for it, but I can't fight this desperate need to try. Try to fit in. Try to make this school experience different than all the previous ones. It's warm out, so I choose a short navy blue skirt and an ice blue and white top made of silk and cotton. It cost as much as the entire clothing section at Walmart, but it's so freaking pretty, and I sigh when it falls into place. In another bag, I find a pair of navy flats with a wide retro silver buckle. I brush my hair and gather the long strands to tie it in a ponytail, then decide to leave it down. I throw on a silver-colored headband that Brooke made me purchase.
Accessories are a must, she'd insisted.
Which is why I also have an entire shopping bag full of bracelets, necklaces, scarves, and purses. In the bathroom, I dig into my makeup kit and apply it with the lightest hand possible. I try for the dewy look, hoping that my time spent in strip clubs and bars doesn't show in my application. I'm not used to high school parties. I'm used to working with 30-year-olds trying to pass as 10 years younger, whose motto is, if you're not wearing makeup 3 layers deep, you're not trying. Once I'm done, I examine my reflection in the mirror and see a stranger. I look prim and proper. I look like a Savannah Montgomery, not an Ella Harper. But maybe that's a good thing. Except there's nothing encouraging about the response I get when I meet the royal brothers in the driveway a few minutes later. Gideon looks startled by my appearance. The twins and Easton snort. Reed smirks. Did I mention they're all wearing low-riding jeans and snug t-shirts? The assholes played me.
We're going to a party, sis, not tea with the queen.
Reed's deep voice doesn't give me any tingles this time. He's mocking me again, and he's enjoying himself. Can you wait 5 minutes while I change? I ask tightly.
Nah, time to go.
He strides toward one of the Range Rovers without a backward look. Gideon glances at me again, then at his brother. Then he sighs and follows Reed to the car. The party is at a house inland, away from the ocean. Easton drives me. The rest of the guys have gone ahead, and he doesn't look thrilled being the one stuck with me. He doesn't say much during the drive. He doesn't turn on the radio either, so the silence makes for an uncomfortable ride. It isn't until he drives through the main gate of a 3-story mansion that he looks my way. Nice headband. I resist the urge to smack that smug smile off his smug face. Thanks. It cost $130. Courtesy of your dad's magic black card. That brings a dark look to his eyes.
Watch yourself, Ella.
I smile and reach for the door handle. Thanks for the ride, Easton. At the columned entrance of the house, Reed and Gideon are standing with their backs turned, engaged in hushed conversation. I hear an annoyed curse from Gideon, then,
not smart, bro, not during the season. The fuck do you care?
Reed mutters.
You made it clear where you stand, and it's no longer at our side. You're my brother, and I'm worried about...
He halts when he notices me approaching. They both tense up, and then Reed turns to greet me. And by greet me, I mean give me a laundry list of things I can and cannot do.
This is Jordan's place. Her parents deal in hotels. Don't get sloppy drunk. Don't embarrass the royal name. Don't hang around us. Don't use the royal name to get anything. Act like a whore and we toss you out on your ass. Gid says your mom was a prostitute. You don't try that shit here, got it?
The infamous royal decrees.
Screw you, royal. She was not a prostitute. Unless dancing is your version of sex. And if so, your sex life must suck.
I meet Reed's hard eyes with defiant ones.
Do your worst. You're an amateur compared to what I've been through.
I waltz past the royal brothers and hike inside like I own the place, then regret it instantly, because everyone in the front parlor turns to stare at me. Pounding bass music thuds through the house, shaking the walls, and vibrating beneath my feet. And loud voices and laughter echo from beyond an arched doorway to my left. A couple of girls in skimpy tops and skin-tight jeans eye me in disdain. A tall polo shirt-wearing guy smirks at me as he raises a beer bottle to his lips. I fight the urge to race back out into the night, but I can cower and be a target for the next 2 years, or I can brazen it out. The best I can do is be bold-faced when necessary, and blend in whenever I have the opportunity. I'm no one's bitch, but I don't need to make waves either. So I just smile politely in the face of their stares, and when their gazes shift behind me toward the incoming royals, I take the opportunity to duck into the nearest corridor. I keep going, until I find the quietest corner, a shadowy little nook, tucked at the end of a hallway. While it seems like the perfect makeout spot, it's empty.
It's still early, a female voice says, and I jump back in surprise. But even if it was later, this part of the house is always empty.
Oh God, I didn't see you there. I clasp a hand over my racing heart.
I get that a lot.
As my eyes adjust to the dark, I see that there's an armchair situated in the corner. The girl on the chair pushes to her feet. She's really short, with chin-length black hair and a tiny mole over her top lip. And she's got curves I'd kill for.
I'm Valerie Carrington.
Jordan's sister?
I'm Ella Royal, she interrupts.
Harper, actually. I peer around her. Was she reading with a flashlight? I spot a phone lying on the small table next to the chair. Texting with her boyfriend? You hiding?
Yep. I'd offer you a chair, but there's only one here.
I know why I'm hiding, I say with sheepish honesty. But what's your excuse? If you're a Carrington, don't you live here? She snickers.
I'm Jordan's poor cousin twice removed. A complete charity case.
And I bet Jordan doesn't let her forget it. Hiding's not a bad thing. If you run away, you live to fight another day. That's my theory, at least. I shrug. Why are you hiding? You're a royal now. There's a slight sneer in her voice that makes me strike back. Like you're a Carrington. She frowns. Gotcha. I run a hand over my forehead, feeling like a complete jerk. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to snap. It's been a long couple of days, and I'm dead tired and completely out of my element. Valerie's head tilts, and she contemplates me for a few seconds.
Okay, then, Ella Harper.
She emphasizes that, as if it's an olive branch.
Let's find something to wake you up. You know how to dance?
Yeah, sort of, I guess. I took lessons when I was younger.
This will be fun, then.
Come on. She leads me down the hall, past the nook, toward a set of stairs. Please don't tell me you have to sleep in a cupboard under the stairs.
Ha, no. I have a proper bedroom upstairs.
This is the staff quarters, and the housekeeper's son is a friend of mine. He went to college and left his old gaming equipment here. We played all the time, including DDR. I have no idea what that is, I confess. Mom and I didn't even own a TV when we were living in that last place in Seattle.
Dance, Dance Revolution. You copy the movements on the screen and get scored for how well you can dance. I'm pretty good at it, but if you have some past dance experience, then it shouldn't be a total annihilation. When she grins at me, I nearly hug her, because it's been so long since I've had a friend. I didn't even realize I needed one until this minute.